Hello and welcome to PharmaLex Talks podcast. Today I'm speaking with Londa Ritchie and Patrick Neusenhausen about the contamination control strategy, which is integral to Annex 1. As noted in Annex 1, a contamination control strategy should be implemented across a manufacturing facility in order to define all critical control points and assess the effectiveness of all the controls, design, procedural, technical, and organizational, and monitoring measures employed to manage risks associated with contamination. Londa and Patrick are both experts in quality management and compliance and really understand the importance of having a well-defined contamination control strategy. Londa is quality director with the Quality Management and Compliance Group at PharmaLex US. She has spent more than 30 years in biopharma focused on quality assurance, including quality risk management, aseptic quality operations, quality systems implementation, contamination risk management, and supplier quality management. Patrick is director and principal consultant at PharmaLex and has more than 25 years of experience in the industry across such a variety of platforms, including biologics, sterile fill and finish, and solid oral dose. So Londa, Patrick, delighted to have you with me here today. Londa, let's start with a high-level description and the purpose of a contamination control strategy.
Well, first, thanks, Elizabeth, for that introduction. And as we go into contamination control strategy, really it's about ensuring patient safety by identifying and avoiding contamination pathways. It's really about patient safety by making sure the companies dig deep enough into the different areas of contamination that can happen in the process.
Excellent. And Patrick, would you like to perhaps add anything to that for us?
Yeah, sure. Essentially, your contamination control strategy, it is a repository of documents that provide a high-level overview of the company controls and how it's preventing contamination of microbial particulates and pathogens, and also on pyrogens. And it is a risk-based document, so you identify where you have potential contamination risks. And based on these risks, you identify what controls you need to have in place to prevent it from happening, and what controls you need to detect the contamination if it would occur.
Thank you both. So let's move on to look at the CCS in the context of Annex 1, which provides a list of elements to be included in the CCS, along with a statement that the contamination control strategy should not be limited to these. Are you aware of other elements that should be included for special cases? And if so, what are those? Perhaps, Patrick, you can pick this up for us.
Yeah, sure. Well, the answer is it depends. And it depends on the manufacturing process of your product. And you need to demonstrate that you have the knowledge and the insights into your manufacturing process. For example, if you are manufacturing radioactive materials, there are some elements that are included that would not apply with other products and that may be not listed in the Annex 1. So it's up to the company itself to identify what additional elements beyond the 15 that are in the Annex 1, as summarized, are relevant for your process.
Yeah, I would say that's my take too. Annex 1 is a guide, but really per ICHQ 9, you're expected to know your processes and know the risks of contamination into that process. Because you might be doing a unique process, you have to assess step by step to determine the different areas where contamination could occur.
So knowing your product and process is really, you know, very much key. Let's talk a little bit about what the CCS provides that GMPs don't actually cover.
I think this is something people in the U.S. industry don't really fully realize. Contamination control is linked to 21 CFR 211.13, which is the control of microbial contamination. But that U.S. regulation really doesn't specify how to control the contamination, whereas the contamination control strategy expects you to go through all the different avenues of how you're currently controlling contamination. You have to think through not just the controls, but the probability that even with those controls in place, you might have some contamination get through. And that's why it's so important to have an unbiased facilitator pushing for the whys and the hows and a cross-functional group to consider this from a patient safety standpoint.
Thank you, Londa. Let's talk about the type of barriers companies have with establishing a contamination control strategy. What have you found to be the biggest ones? Patrick, perhaps you could take up on this.
Yeah, I think it needs to start with a cross-functional team of people who are putting their heads together. We hear too often at seminars and conferences and also with the companies we work with, like, oh, this resides with the micro department. Microbiology is the confirmation that you have contamination, but it's not a micro thing because they don't necessarily have the insights and the in-depth knowledge about the manufacturing process or the different utilities that feed into it, how the equipment operates and is controlled, and as mentioned, how the utilities are controlled, and so on. So to me, the biggest barrier is to get a cross-functional buy-in and ownership. It's fine that it's owned by the micro department or the sterility assurance lead or quality assurance or whatever the function is, but it needs to be supported site-wide.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think the contamination control strategy should be co-owned by microbiology and, let's say, facilities engineering, as there's so much in there about equipment, utilities, and even the whole facility layout. I actually like to advocate with several sites that I work with that it's really should be owned in part by facilities engineering, but it's not a common practice. The CCS is often thought of as a QA thing or a QC thing, or even micro owns it. But having engineering co-own it and understand it, that's the foundation of a good CCS, in my opinion.
That's such an interesting perspective, and hopefully one that manufacturers will take on board. Patrick, how do contamination control, risk assessment, and CCS actually fit together?
Well, a very short answer, like a glove. If you don't know your risks, you don't know how to control what you need to control.
Exactly. And in the US, I've seen there are companies that are just putting together the document that's their contamination control strategy without doing the risk assessment. It reads almost like a site master file. Instead of really going through the exercise of performing the overall risk assessment, they may have performed risk assessments on different parts of contamination control, but they haven't really looked at it holistically. And so there's a weakness where the processes cross over different functions. So it's important that the industry understands this is intended also as a continuous improvement effort. A lot of times I hear that they're worried about airing dirty laundry, but by putting things out there and exposing that dirty laundry, you're actually committing yourself to fixing the problem.
Very well put, and thank you, Londa, for that. Companies have been doing risk assessments for the different components of contamination for some time now. What does a comprehensive CC or A provide that is missing from all the individual risk assessments?
Well, I can answer that to start with. It's an holistic view and putting everything together to see how they supplement, augment, or even back up each other so that you don't rely on a single point of failure.
Again, I have to agree with Patrick. It's important that functions in the plant don't work as silos. And that might be a mind change for some companies that don't just say, you know, QA is responsible for this or operations responsible for that, or even the tech team is responsible for another aspect of contamination control. Instead, all these different functions need to be interlinked and responsible for the overall contamination control.
Thank you. Clearly, as companies document the CCRA and CCS, especially when comparing to the expectations of the revised Annex 1, there will be gaps and risks to manage. I imagine that those gaps may be bigger or more plentiful for aging facilities, which may make this an overwhelming endeavor. What guidance can you provide on how aging facilities should really approach the CCRA and CCS requirements?
Yeah, I'll start on that. I would say don't sweep it under the rug or minimize it. With an aging facility, it can seem overwhelming to get the cash needed to repair or fix everything. But instead, think of it as a stepwise continuous improvement approach and focus on making those steps step by step. It's about patient safety fundamentally, and you have to keep that in mind and at least work toward that continuous improvement goal. And I think, Patrick, you had a few more of these assessments where it's more about prioritizing the high-risk items. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, Londa. For me, the important thing is, especially with an aging facility, is to know your current state and your desired state, where you want to move to, and determine how you will get there. What are your interim mitigations to ultimately get to the desired state? And that will depend on your facility. What are your biggest gaps? How big is your risk? Or how big is the non-compliance if you are talking purely from a GMP perspective? So that's how then, how you prioritize your actions time-wise. And it's important to remember that aging facilities, they have been manufacturing a product, and hopefully in a safe manner for many, many years. So not all of the sudden that in following the letter of the Annex 1, they are making an unsafe product. And that is why it is so important to have your contamination control strategy in place. So you can demonstrate why your product is still safe, even though you're still not at the desired level as per the Annex 1. It's about showing what controls you have in place to show that it's still a safe way to manufacture that product.
The CCS is expected to be a life cycle approach. Can you explain a bit more on what that means and how companies are maintaining that approach, including best practices?
Yeah, I think it's common when you have a strategy document in industry to think of it as you complete that, you set it aside, you do a periodic review every year or two. But the CCS is expected to be a living document where you have inputs from real-time activities that are happening in the operations, and that should feed into the document and challenge those contamination controls. I've proposed that the concepts of the CCS be reviewed during something we already do, the monthly quality management review process. That's a good place. We're already looking at contamination control or events that have happened. That's a place to challenge if the systems and controls in place maintain the state of control for contamination as well as the plant in general.
Londa, do you think contamination control strategy will actually prevent batch rejections or drug shortages? And if so, why?
Yeah, when you look at the root cause of drug shortages, a lot of times that relates to some type of contamination control or lack thereof. There's definitely a focus from regulatory authorities globally to prevent drug shortage. So knowing the points of entry for contamination and at least having some interim controls in place until full barriers can be achieved will help get medicines to people who really depend on them.
Londa, Patrick, thank you both so much for sharing your insights on contamination control strategies and what they actually mean for the industry. Thank you also to our listeners. I hope that you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another to your business. Pharmalex, part of Cencora, serves the pharma, biotech, and medtech industries, guiding our clients through the entire product lifecycle, from early strategic planning, non-clinical and clinical regulatory submission processes, and post-approval activities. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can join us for future podcasts.